This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
Well, my BFRB is a bit of a combination of trichotillomania and what I then actually learned about as I was researching the hair pulling and that. I started to pick because I can have really bad eczema, so I end up with lots of scabs on my body and things like that. And so it's kind of gone from, so it's mainly my eyelashes and eyebrows that get the worst of my trichotillomania, and then really from a like I pick skin and things like that as well. So then when I realized that was something I did, I was like, oh wow, that is a bit BFRB for sure. That definitely is one. So essentially it kind of started really when I can remember it really clearly when I first did it. That's really stuck with me. I was 14 years old. I'm 26 now, so it was quite a long time ago, but I can remember the day really clearly. So when I was 14, the whole year was a bit of a blur, to be honest. I had just a lot of things going on. My dad had got multiple girlfriends since my parents split up. He moved one in within 2 weeks of knowing her, so I had that to deal with. I know he's married to her now and everything, but it's not the point. I think as a young person, that was really tricky to kind of, 1 week it was one woman, then the next minute it's like, oh yeah, this woman's just moving into your childhood home. And it was a bit like, what is going on here? So I had that. I started a relationship with a 16-year-old that was a bit older. When I look back, I actually think I was definitely being groomed. It was not anything that I would have, you know, wanted at that age. I was very much being taken advantage of. And I think also finding out the other year that I'm autistic made a lot of sense as well, because it was that sort of, I was led into that false sense of security with him, which then led to him trying basically to sexually assault me. And then I think that entire year, once everything had happened, I remember going on a holiday with my mum, and it was really strange. I remember just looking in the mirror, and you know when like eyelashes will kind of grow downwards naturally, like, you know, they kind of go into it, it doesn't look right. So I'm looking in the mirror at 14. It was this nice like cottage we were staying at, and I'm like sort of looking in the mirror. I thought, oh, that eyelash doesn't, that looks a bit out of place. And I pulled it. And then once I had that feeling, it was like, oh, this is really nice. And then when you talk about on like various posts about the bulb and doing that with the end of it, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. I was like, that's exactly what sort of got me starting it. And then from then onwards, it just kind of got worse, really. It just kind of, as I went through secondary school and things like that, it just got worse. There was real big points of the year when I was doing my exams and things like that. It was really clear that's what was sort of, it was stress related. It was when I was in very stressful situations, I did it a lot more. Yeah, so I really remember that quite vividly with my, yeah, how it kind of started and everything. And then I've just sort of had lots of experience with it going, yeah, going forward up till now. I still struggle with it now, very much so. It's not gone away. I've not just suddenly stopped it, as some people think you can do, which I just find absolutely hysterical sometimes, because I think until you've actually done it, you don't know whether it's not just a case of one day you wake up and you go, right, I'm going to stop this today. and then you stop. It doesn't, that is not how it works at all. And it's very much comes in those waves when I've got particularly stressful times at work or anything like that. I can see when it starts to sort of, ramp up a bit and I start really pulling quite badly. So, yeah, that's kind of my BFRB in a bit of a nutshell, really.
When you started pulling, did your parents notice right away? Did you share with anybody?
No, I didn't, because I thought it was a very, in my head at the time, it was like, this is weird. This is not normal, and I'd sit there thinking, and I can't remember when it was noticed properly by my parents, because it wasn't when I can't remember exactly how it came about, but I just remember going to a park with my mum and I didn't put any makeup on. And that's when I think she then looked and she went, oh my God, like, where's your eyebrows gone? Where's your eyelashes? Because I think it was really bad to a point where I actually don't think I had any on my top like lash line at one point. It was really bad. And then I was forever like, pulling at it and things like that. So, and then when my parents sort of found out, it was very much kind of like, it was sort of treated as if I was like biting my nails and things like that, which I get can also be a, but I think they just seemed to think I would grow out of it or something, or it was my hormones being a teenager, like, So, yeah, although they are, my mum's very supportive of it now and everything, and she understands I go through really kind of bad patches with it. So yeah, that was sort of my parents' kind of reaction, was it was just a bit of a, you just bite your nails, kind of you'll stop doing it. And then obviously that's not the case. And even my mum's come to realise that now. She know now there's been more sort of research published about it and things. I think that was able to sort of, when I showed my mum that, she was like, oh God, yeah, no, it is really bad. It's not just like, picking your nails and things like that. It's a lot more to it. So, and then I think especially finding out I was autistic, which was only September of last year. So it's not even been a full year since I've been diagnosed. And I think when I then spoke to the psychologist about it, she was like, yeah, this is very common as a sort of, and I've seen that you've had other people on that have talked about that autism and BRFB coming very much hand in hand. And it does sort of make sense with the sensory aspect of things and the sensation you get from it when you actually do it. So yeah, that was sort of my parents' kind of, I guess, reaction to it.
At what point did you find out there was a name for your behavior?
It was when I actually started university. So I studied learning disabilities nursing. And when I started the course, I just knew something wasn't. I think it, for me, the strange thing is it was living with people at uni and seeing other girls walking, through the corridor without their makeup on, because we're, and my roommate would just walk out without her makeup on, and to me that was like, oh my God, what are you doing? So, because to me that was like such a daunting thought, because I used to very much hide it, because I'd draw my eyebrows on, do all this, and then to me that was like, that's hidden, I don't need to sort of worry about it. And then I think that for me was when I really started to look it up, and then that's when I saw the word for it. And then that's when I went to my uni student support service. So I went there. And then I think what was disheartening is the fact that I spoke to somebody. So you had to have like a consultation with somebody before, just to find out what the issues were and what they could support you with. And I sort of spoke to this like lady who must have been in like her 50s or something. And I'm sat talking to her and she goes, oh, she's like, yeah, oh no, I know what that is, hair pulling and things. She's like, but it's completely like normal. You don't need to worry, because I would frequently just have loads of eyelashes on my textbook after I'd, done revision, talking about herself. And I was a bit like, Oh, am I again? Then it was that thing of, am I over exaggerating it? Is this just like a simple little habit, as they call it, that you're just going to get over? And actually, it really wasn't. But to be fair, the counsellor who I then started sessions with was really lovely about it. And she actually got me to sort of think about it a bit more. And that's when I really started to look into it, kind of find out a bit more about what it actually was. And then when I realised there was actually a name for it, and then obviously as I started picking at scabs and things, that's when I realised that there's actually a thing called dermatillomania as well. So that's kind of where I really found the word for it, to be honest with you.
How did it feel knowing there was a name? I know some people, like a label can be a negative thing. Other times it's like, oh, great, I'm not the only one. How did you feel?
I think it was that, yeah, it was like, oh, great, this is actually something people have recognized and actually said is a disorder. It's not just, it's actually something that can, have an impact, a significant impact on your life. And it's very much, and I think it was just nice knowing that there's other people that have had that experience and it's actually been properly researched and looked into. And they now recognize it as being a disorder, something that can have a really bad impact on your life, really. So I think for me, that was just nice to know in some respects. So yeah, I've come away, I think because I've done so many years of masking with my autism and things, I just got to a point where I was like, actually, let's call a spade, let's not mess about. Like that is what it is. So yeah, I think for me, that's how it made me feel.
I find it so interesting that the first person you spoke to had a BFRB and was like, yeah, it's no biggie. Like that must have been like not confusing, but a complicated experience because it's exciting to meet somebody like you, but then also it's like, well, wait, you're not really taking it the same way that I am. How did you feel with that?
It was a bit, it was quite shattering, to be honest. I think that's the best way I can. I know it's probably not a right, but sort of, it was just a bit of an eye-opener because it was like, oh, and then I felt like I'd been really sort of like, I just felt like I'd been exaggerating everything I was feeling, and it was passed off as if it was something normal that everybody does. And I think for me, that made me feel really rubbish, to be honest, because it was just like, oh, okay, great. I just do what everyone else does, which then as I looked into it a bit more, it was like, oh, okay, no, that's not quite that. I know there's a lot of people that do it, but also I know it's not a everyday thing for everybody that people come across all the time. So I think for me, I think it was just researching and learning about it and trying to join like Facebook groups and things like that. I think that's what sort of helped me in the end get over that initial, because it was a bit like, oh, first person I've actually properly spoke to about it has just basically gone, yeah, I've got one too, just sort of get over it in a sense. And I was like, oh, okay, thanks for that.
The second person you spoke to at the student support center, what were some things, if you remember, that maybe helped you in your journey?
I think sort of that initial, I think just because of how nice she'd been, and when I'd talked about my experiences and where it kind of started and that, I think it was just really, I think it was nice that somebody was listening to me and not just passing it off as something that was, excuse me, like really normal and just standard in everyday kind of life that everybody does it. I think it was just nice that somebody listened and said, I hear you and I know you're struggling with it. It's not okay in that, but it's okay to feel that way about it as well. That kind of the guilt and stuff afterwards. She said, that's okay. It's like that's a normal thing. If you've changed, physically altered your appearance, you're going to feel a little bit of that guilt and shame as well to a point. And she said, that's not necessarily a bad thing all the time. So I think it was just nice to know that I wasn't, yeah, the only one again.
You mentioned putting on makeup to cover up missing areas. I did the same thing, and I felt like I couldn't leave the house unless like 10 things were done. What was kind of your routine before leaving?
It was very much, I had to have my, no matter how late I was, I could be running really late for school or really late for a lecture at uni, and I would still be like, no, I'm not setting my foot past that doorway until I've got my eyebrows drawn on and my eyeliner at the top. That was the two key things I had to have on, or I was not leaving the house. But bit of a bonus with that, I can now do a really good cat eye eyeliner. So that's why I try and think of the positive side of that, is it was like, although yes, like you say, it then took off a lot of my life because it was that can't go out without makeup. It's only recently I've actually started being around my partner without my makeup on, because I would wear it till like I'd go to sleep in it because I was that worried about what I thought I'd look like. And then the next day it would be, you know, which I know sleeping in your makeup, you're not supposed to do it, but that's what I did because I just thought it was easier for me to do that. It's only recently I've actually felt comfortable enough, and not for anything he did. He's always been super understanding and still very much is. I just think at the time it was me, it was my feelings and kind of, no, I've got to have this on because he's going to think I look ugly and stuff like this. And actually he, it really isn't a major issue for him. He just obviously supports me when I've got the guilt and that kind of afterwards. He's very understanding of it. So, and we've got a good kind of ways of him trying to support me with it, and it does really kind of work because a lot of it's just bringing me back into the room almost, because you very much go into that automatic state. It's like that trance-like state, and that's why I think as well on top of it, seeing your TikToks really helped me, using kind of that kind of the humor is a bit, you know, adding the humor into it, I think really helped. And then I followed a couple of meme pages too. And actually, that sort of really kind of helped me because I very much like to use a little bit of humor to cope with things. I think that's quite healthy personally. I know lots of people have strong opinions about that, but I personally like using humor to sort of, and I think seeing like all the different things if you go into your like mind palace and stuff to like, I was like, oh God, yeah, I know I do feel like that. And I think it's just he's very good at being able to bring me back in to the room and things, and he knows that mirrors can be a trigger. Like he'll stand talking to me the other side of the bathroom door just to make sure that I'm not, you know, just to kind of keep me doing something else. So just talking, he'll just start asking me random questions about stuff, and like I know what he's doing and that, but he does it in a way that doesn't make me feel like, you know, what you're doing, stop doing that and all that. Like he knows that's just never gonna. And he's never done that before. He just knew that he goes, that's not going to help people because, you know, he said he doesn't have similar experiences, but we're like biting nails and things like that. He said, I know it's not a simple case of just you're told to stop and you just stop. Like that's not.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. A lot of people in the community have a hard time opening up and having romantic relationships because of the closeness, you know, physically and emotionally. What advice would you give someone who wants to start sharing with a romantic partner?
I would say, really, it's just if they are the right person for you, they will make those accommodations. They will understand when you have that conversation with them. I must admit, it took me a while to finally sort of say to them, look, I do have this condition, because I think it was that whole thing of, like you say, it's all good when you're sort of dating in those initial stages, and you can kind of, it's when you start staying at each other's houses and then you're sleeping over and then you've got to get up the next day. And it's like, oh no, they're gonna see it. Like my mask is gonna come off and he's gonna see this, like, you know, in my head it was like this, he's gonna see this like demon that's like here. And really it's like, no, it's still your face, Jess. I have no issues, you know, and I think that's it really. The bottom line is that if they do appreciate you and understand you for having your BFRB and having those tricky conversations with you, they're the right person to be with. I think it's quite, clear that if you mentioned it and somebody reacted really, quite badly, it's sort of like, they're probably not going to be good to be in a relationship with. So that's sort of my advice that I would give to people, because I do understand, when you have to do sleepovers, things like that, they're going to see you a lot more kind of barefaced a lot of the time. So.
During your lifetime with trichotillomania, even dermatillomania, have there been moments where you had or you felt that you had to avoid a situation or avoid an event because of your BFRB?
Oh, absolutely. Lots of times where I've cancelled plans when I've had a bad, particularly for me, it's the evening, nighttime. That can be a real big. So if I've had a really bad pick the day before and I'm supposed to be doing something the next day, I have cancelled plans because of it, because I've just had this immense guilt and shame. And then it's this panic of, oh, what if they take a picture from a certain angle and they can see I've not got any eyelashes and things like that? Or, like, if it was anything to do with water in particular, so swimming, things like that, I'd be like, oh, no. If I was having to swim the next day, it would really freak me out going, because I'd just be like, no, I don't want people to see it, and potentially take a picture and it might, like you say, the angle of it be like, oh my God, where's her eyelashes? And I just, yeah. So I have, it has definitely impacted me, but I've got a lot better with that over the last few years of just actually being able to. There's the odd I still do every now and again, but I think that's just natural as well, just being exhausted and things like that sometimes. But yeah, it definitely did impact me, because I'd cancelled plans on people because I just felt really embarrassed more than anything else.
I noticed in my with my trichotillomania that it'll come in waves. Sometimes it's so severe, it doesn't matter what tools I use, it's still happening. And other times, things start growing back. Have you noticed the same thing with yours?
Oh, absolutely. That's pretty much spot on. Yeah, I'll go through really bad phases where I'm pulling every night and that. Then sometimes I'll notice, oh, and I see like the little achievements, even if I've just pulled one eyelash out. I think, Jess, it's one eyelash out of all the others that could grow back. That's in my head, that's a win as far as I'm concerned. Even if I just pull one eyelash out one day, it's better than when I'm pulling lots of them out in one go and, standing at the mirror for hours and hours.
Do you have a memory of a challenging time? One of those times where it was like, woo, I'm happy I survived after this.
Yeah, there's been at least a couple of occasions where, yeah, there was sometimes I just thought, I'm not going to get, and I got into very dark places, I would think about very dark thoughts, because I just didn't, in my head, it was like, I just don't want to deal with this. I don't want to be here. And I'd get into very dark places, and that could go on for quite a few days. And I think what's important as well, particularly being, female and having menstrual cycles, I think it was identifying certain times of the month where it would kind of get really bad, that week before, when you're very emotional anyway, your emotions are all over the place. And then I think those were the times where it'd be really intense. But on a positive note, there has been a time, and I think that's what's keeping me sort of going in reducing it. Like you said, it's hard, I think, thinking about being completely pull free. I think that's a bit, I think, as ideal as that would be, I think realistically it's just, like I said, is reducing it slowly, kind of that you've done just one eyelash today, it's fine, you've still picked, but you just did one, it's okay, it's better than when you've done it before. And I actually went through a period where I didn't pick for a solid 6 weeks, and it was really it, yeah, it was when I was about 18, I want to say, and it was the week, I think I know exactly what it was. So I'd finished my A level exams, and I was just literally waiting to go to, I was getting all my stuff ready to move into uni and things like that. And it was the one time I think there was, in my head, there was no demands or pressure, because I'd passed my exams I didn't have to do any sort of, specific work or anything. And I think in those 6 weeks, it just really, when I started uni, it's quite funny in some ways because when I started uni, obviously they take your student ID. And I've got this lush, like, full set of lashes, and my eyebrows are fuller, and I didn't have as much makeup on. And then, obviously, within a couple of weeks of uni, it just reverted back a bit. But then again, I think that was okay as well because I'd just moved out and I was at uni. I was in a new setting, new environment. So I think in my head, like, it's okay to also have. It made sense as to why I stopped for that period of time, but also it made sense as to why I started it. So I think there's no point in trying to beat myself up about it, really.
I know we just talked about those challenging moments. What does success with a BFRB look like to you?
I think the first important part, I think, in success in a BFRB is really, I think it's recognizing it. And recognizing those feelings is a major big step, and recognizing that you go into very much an automatic, being really hard on yourself afterwards. It's being like, actually, I've done a bit. And like I said, sort of, I think success is just that kind of, I think the first part is just recognizing it and recognizing what could trigger an episode and just trying, to make a bit of a conscious effort sometimes to just be like, okay, right, it's getting to the evening. What can I do to sort of, and then it's like sometimes I'll be sat reading, and as I say, I'll pull out an eyebrow or something and I'll go, oh, and I'll get really cross with myself. And then I just think, no, this is good. Like, just you've recognized it, you've stopped it, and that's an achievement in my head. So it's not that you consistently stop it. I think it's when you do, even if it's once or twice a week, you go, oh, okay, I've pulled, I'm going to stop it. I think that's the first important stage in feeling, I guess, that your BFRB, you're successfully kind of managing it, I guess, is accepting that you're still sometimes going to pull, but it's okay when you do it, I think, is the real. I think success, because I really used to. I wasn't at this stage. If you'd have asked me a couple of years ago, I was not at that stage. I'd have just beat myself up. I wanted to be completely pull free. And now I've started to let, and then I started learning gradually that actually that's going to frustrate me more, and that's going to be really unrealistic. So actually breaking it down really helped me, and thinking actually the first stage is, what's the big trigger points? It's the evening, it's mirrors, it's things like that. I've started, putting things, because I was going to be, there was points where I wanted to be really harsh and put stuff next to my mirror, being like, no, don't do this, you like to beat myself up. And then I just thought, no, that's not going to help me. It needs to be that I need to reassure myself, give myself that assurance as well, and then having the support of people around me as well, I think, is that kind of key part in the, I guess, success of just being able to manage it when and recognizing and managing it. I think is a real big success, because I think because I didn't recognize it as anything before, I was at a bit of a loss, because it's like, and then as we talked about knowing the name for it, that it's actually a thing, it's been researched, was that kind of, okay, right, this is not something completely out the blue that, people have no idea about. This is something that people look into. It's something that people research and recognize as having an impact on people. So I think for me, that's really the key part.
What are some of your favorite BFRB management strategies or tools?
I think for me, it was like the fidget things are all well and good, and I do use them. I've constantly got something in my hands of some sort. I've got a pen I've been twirling around in my hand as we're talking. So it's just forever having something in my hands, I think, was a big one for me, is just doing bits with your hands. So I do things like I play on my Nintendo Switch, so that's good because I'm just forever doing stuff with my fingers. So doing that, gardening was a big is a big one for me as well, because I'm actually doing something productive, but I'm not thinking about picking because I've got big garden gloves on and things like that. And if you've had your hands in, like, weeds and stuff, you don't want to be touching your face necessarily with the garden gloves. So that kind of helps a lot as well, gardening. And then recently I've started getting into Lego as well. So I've started doing Lego bits. I'm a big fan of Animal Crossing, and that seems to have helped me for I know it sounds weird, but that game really sort of helped me with my trichotillomania because it's just a real cozy game you can just sit on, you just get to wander. It's not stressful or anything, it's not like you're doing Call of Duty where you're like shouting at the screen, It's doing those relaxing activities for me. Sometimes as well, so my partner will like give me a little hand massage and things like that, just to kind of when he can see that my hands are, I don't know what to do with them. He said when I can see that, he'll just hold my hand gently. He doesn't necessarily say anything either. He doesn't point it out. He'll just start stroking my hand and stuff. So some of those things have been helpful for me, really. It's just a case of, and I think, yeah, like the fidget things and that, people seem to think it's going to solve it, and actually it's like not necessarily. It helps, not all the time though. As you say, there's going to be times where it doesn't help and it's like, no, I just want to pick today, that's what I want to do, and it's that, but it's recognizing it again. So those are really sort of my main things, and just trying to, I always thought it was keeping busy all the time that was the key part, and actually what I've realized is it's getting that right balance between keeping busy but when I'm relaxing also knowing how to relax that won't necessarily send me into that kind of automatic state. So
My favorite question is, what has your BFRB taught you?
I think it's taught me to be to actually be kind to myself and to not see it as this unusual, weird thing that, people don't experience. I think it's that kind of, even though the nuances around feeling the little, bulb on your lips and little things like that and rolling, around your fingers and that, which I think really that for me is what it's taught me, to be honest, is just actually it's okay. It makes sense as to why it's done, why people develop them and why they do it. I think for me, that's the real kind of, that's really what it's taught me.